This is a journey into sound. A journey which along the way will bring to you new color, new dimension, new values, and a new experience.
A little view for you and me by Enoch Light.
More you're a coward.
Whoa!
Yeah, that's where I'm going there. Morris dancing, motherfucker.
What?
What the hell was that? You understand? We are in the middle of political turmoil and you're bringing some Morris dancing. Thank
I
you
thought very
I much.
Would just bring a bit of light-hearted.
Like really dark light. Like
dark light.
Just dark light.
Yeah. Okay then.
Dark,
right.
Dark, terrible light. Horrible light. False light, actually. False.
There's no such thing as false light. How can light be false?
There can be false.
If you're surrounded by darkness, right?
You think it's light at the end of the tunnel, but it's just a glowworm. It's just a bunch of glowworms who just cobbled together for the explicit
hey,
purpose.
Hey man, don't knock the glowworms.
False advertising.
Anyway, this is trying to sound intelligent.
Trying to sound intelligent.
Which you've been trying to do.
Trying really hard.
We've been missing on the strap line, so what are we? We are two post-Brexit poets who have lost the meaning of life. And I think that's it now.
That's pretty much
That's pretty much it now.
That's pretty much it to the
end. I'm Mr. G.
I'm Joshua E. Dehan.
And we have got the wonderful guest, Holly McNeish.
Holly McNeish.
How are you doing?
I'm all right. I don't like the Morris dancing diss, but I'm all right.
It wasn't the diss. I like Morris dancing.
Lots of people do Morris. They're not the Brexits.
No,
that's
no.
The problem.
I love Morris dancing. I just don't like Mr. G. And if there's anything I can make him feel bad, I will. And the idea of Mr. G holding two handkerchiefs and just hopping around the field.
Wouldn't it be good?
It would be great. I would love
it.
I would take all the pictures. I would Vine it. I would Snapchat it. I would Instagram put a lovely filter.
You should have seen me last Saturday at the Black Lives Matter march.
Wow.
No one appreciated it. Holly's gone red. That's who we're taking. So, thank you very much for coming down to
thank
the show.
You very much for coming down.
Holly was very, very nervous. Remember, I said to you that some poets are very nervous about coming on the show.
You made me nervous. Right. You're
exactly.
Telling me you're gonna like get me.
He makes you nervous, and then when he comes to me, he goes, "Josh, Holly's scared of you.
Holly's scared of
you." I'm not scared of it. It's just you, I don't know. I have to talk about things and sometimes I don't think my opinion. I don't mind talking in poems that I thought about over like 2 days.
No, because I met her at the Roundhouse and she was like doing that big slam thing. And I spoke to her. I said, "Then why don't you come on the show? Why don't you come on the show?" And she just got all scared because obviously I mentioned your name and that really freaked her out. She said that you traumatised her child back in the day.
Yeah.
And then she went and did a performance. And afterwards she came up and she just goes, "Oh my god, the whole time I was just thinking about going on this show. I was always thinking about going, I don't know what to do, I don't know what to do." And I was like, wow, is it really that frightening, man? Are we really that intimidating?
No, it's like the stage is intimidating anyway, but at least I've got a book and I can read from it. You lot are just going to ask me questions and I'll like blurt my words, say something wrong, everyone like...
Okay, we promise if you say anything incriminating, like actually Theresa May is a good idea, we'll have it cut up.
You need to have diversity on this show, don't you?
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe I voted to leave. No,
yeah,
no.
Yeah, we'll find out.
Maybe
in second
my,
turn.
My family's Scottish. I didn't care.
Right. Controversial.
Oh, there you go.
Only
go on then, Josh. Suddenly Mr. G's looking kind of attractive nowadays, isn't he?
Yeah.
Bit of Morris dancing.
Yeah, Morris dancing.
Might have to bring it back in just to calm the mood down. Anyway, Holly, you've been doing some fantastic things in terms of like spoken word, right? Oh my god, we got the giggles now. Now, you've been doing some fantastic things in terms of your career and spoken word. My first memory of you was coming down to Chillpill in the early days. Came down with your daughter, I remember, right?
Yeah.
And I remember just thinking, get that kid out of here, right? And then I realized that he was one of the performers.
Do you want to know my first memory?
Yeah.
Polly sent me an email. Can I talk about this?
I don't know what it is.
Holly sent me an email going, yeah, I'd like to perform a Paul Jazzy. And then I watched her poems and I sent her an email saying, yeah, I like your stuff, but you're too angry.
Did you?
You said that Harley was too angry.
I said, oh, remember when you first started in Barago, you had like two poems on and they were proper hardcore. Like, I think you'd written a poem about the media and how much you didn't like it or something like that, right?
Is that the Willy's one?
No, I don't remember. That's not very angry.
Yeah. No,
Hate Magazine and Bitch Fights, that's what it was.
Yeah, I think it was probably those ones. And I remember when I did finally book you, you did tell me, like, Josh, you booked me, so I'm guessing I'm not that angry.
Did I ask to get a gig? I didn't think I asked for any gigs, ever. No, that was like my rule.
You sent me an email.
What do you mean you didn't ask to get for gigs? You used to hang around the outside our thing begging to come into our match.
I never even lived in London.
Controversy!
I only came up when I got invited.
Hey, I'm a friend of Raymond's. I'm a friend of Deanna's. Hi, Mr. G. And I was like, yeah, don't worry about it, kid, man. Just get to the back of the line, right?
Such lies. I knew that this would happen.
But that's all in the past.
And now, look how well you've done. Look how well you've done.
Look how far you've come.
Despite all the barriers we've tried to place, all of the patriarchal barriers we've tried to place to ruin your career.
Telling me not to be so angry about things I was angry
exactly.
about.
Exactly. I like
that.
Honestly. I was wrong.
I was writing about it rather than like shouting.
Yeah. And Josh wrote a review saying, Holly McNeish is an amazing poet. If only she would smile.
That's the one.
Cold. You've done very, very well. How has it been from the inside of all of that progress in your career?
I don't really know what to say about it. Yeah, I'm just doing gigs, like trying to work out where I'm going next, what I'm going to be doing. I just write and then it feels a bit surreal. Like it doesn't just happen because I sit at the computer until like 3 o'clock. Probably most nights after I put my daughter to bed, doing admin, doing whatever.
Keeping
like
the game going.
Tweet deck stuff, writing. I work really hard, but it seems a little bit surreal. Because it's like a split life. It's very different from being in a small village, being a mum, doing a school run.
Yeah.
And then going and reading poems to like 300 people or whatever.
Sounds very Superman-y.
It's weird.
You're like, bye.
He said.
I think the other way around.
He said Superman-y. Yeah, there you go.
Wow, really? You're going there.
I'm going there.
Oh, because I called you a Morris dancer. Mm. Oh, my days.
You did say Superman. I didn't like the fact that you were like, drop off at the school run, that's normal, and then the Superman or woman or whatever comes out when I go to the gigs. I'd say it the other way around. That's easier, and then the super thing comes out when you're the mum.
Oh, I see. Cool. Maybe. I just think because Superman is more like a secret identity, although with Superman, it's actually the other way around. Because, you know, he's actually Superman. So what you said was probably
right. You just keep digging that hole and we'll just watch you fall down.
No, I'm actually agreeing with her. I'm agreeing that I was wrong, see?
Yeah.
I think it's harder to be a mum than a poet.
That's what I was saying.
Yeah.
So there you go. Yeah.
What was the initial spark that got you into poetry?
Yours Too's poetry that I saw.
Whose?
Yours.
Don't lie. Look at you, man. Don't play lie. That game. Don't act all nice.
It's because right? You were being mean, so I've got to be nice.
I know those chess moves, right? Holly, I know those chess moves.
You were going to be mean through kindness.
Right? Exactly. Don't be like, I'm just a nice person in the world, and if only you two would calm down. No, come on, go for it, man.
I don't know what got me into it. I've been writing since I was little. Probably like rhymes like Please with Mrs. Butler. All those kids like... Do you know it?
No, I don't.
Mrs. Butler, no, this boy Derek no. Drew keeps copying my work, miss. What shall I do? You don't know it?
No, I don't know that one.
We listen to Tupac. And
trust me, I think we're having
a different childhood.
Exactly. So, this is like an insight into the Brexit mind for me.
See, so, the stereotype. So this is what disengages the other voters. This is it. It's like Roger McGough and Colin West, basically little nursery rhymes that my mum used to read to me.
Oh, Roger McGough. Yeah. Oh, no, I rate Roger McGough.
Yeah.
I never heard those little tiny little rhymes.
So
I heard a lot of church stuff, I can't lie. So.
Okay. No, I didn't. My parents are not.
Yeah, there you go. So there you go.
Yeah. So it was like little rhymes like that and then songs. I just like listening to music and I used to print off the words and then I used to sort of sometimes maybe refuse to dance at the nightclub if I didn't agree with the words in the song.
Which songs particularly?
Well, I was quite obsessed with 50 Cent
right.
when I was like, whatever age, I can't even remember. And then I was listening more and more, and I liked loads of people, loved the beat every time it came on. I was like, so excited to dance. And then I was like, I don't know, should I be dancing to this? Like certain ones I don't mind, but other ones I was like, no, this is crap.
Yeah.
What am I doing? And then I was like, oh, I don't know. So I started thinking about the lyrics more, I guess.
Because you wrote a poem where, wasn't it to Flo Rida's?
I think for me, that is still kind of like the
that's
best,
quite interesting.
The best use of form, I feel, in terms of YouTube. I was so pissed off.
No, I because you shared it.
Yeah, I was so pissed off that you hadn't actually glued it together for anybody to do it. Yeah,
I tried. Like, I put it on the thing. I did it in so many different ways, but every single time it got taken down by the record company. They're on it. I don't know how, like, the coding or whatever is in it. Like, I re-recorded his song. I put it over the video. I put my stuff over it. Tried to take the audio out of it. Like, downloaded it. But I don't know how this technology works. But it always got found, so I couldn't do it. That's why.
When we were still running Paul Jazzy magazine, I posted to them and I told people to mute the volume of one and play yours. And the way it synced so perfectly.
But that's probably why it spread, because it was on the Paul Jazzy website. Because that was the only place where it's together, and I was sharing it like that. Thanks. Okay. It's true.
So safety. I've helped people. When you say helped people,
you're implying there's a plural. We've only got one person here.
Yeah, that's one more than you. Russell Brand doesn't count, my friend. Russell Brand doesn't count.
Hey, man, you don't want to know the people I've helped, man.
Yeah, I thought it was just so great how I had hoped that a lot more people would do stuff like that, where they took material off YouTube or wherever and they played around with it. I think it was very interesting, and you haven't done anything else like that. Why not?
I don't know. I wanted to. And I've written some things. I haven't put them up. I just keep getting, like, distracted by other things that I'm doing,
this
basically.
Big, massive book you finished. Oh, my God. Nobody told me.
And then a tour. And then, yeah, I've got loads of stuff that I still want to do. I've written loads of, like, kids stuff and want to put that up. Want to do this whole thing on audio. I'd like to do the whole book read out on YouTube, to be honest.
Maybe get Flow Rider to do it.
Life gets in the way.
If you could, man. Bless you.
But that Flow Rider thing, that's what I like about poetry. Like, since I've started actually reading them out, I changed my mind on loads of things. Like, you look, talking about politics. But I wasn't always like a left-leaning, liberal, poet-minded kid, really. I wasn't right-wing or anything. What, just didn't really care about politics.
Were you throwing a brick through Angela Eaton's window?
You're a communista now.
I love it.
But you can't deny that you are trying to make a point in a lot of your poems, whether it's to do with opinions of public breastfeeding, or whether it's to do with opinions on immigrants.
Yeah, but I'm not, like, trying to... Like, I get asked loads by, like, newspapers to write poems about certain things, and I don't do it because I don't... I think I did it once for The Guardian, and I was like, I don't want to do this. Because I just write them. Like, I just write them for me, and then the ones that I put up... Like mathematics or whatever, but that was still me trying to work out what the hell I thought about it, because I was studying forced migration and economics because I was doing a master's in it.
Yeah.
So I'm like sat with all this reading material, and it was from a lecture and then from talking to like a neighbour that I don't get on with and people in the shop I was working in who were pretty xenophobic. Like, loads of my poems are just me trying to like summarise my thoughts about things. And then, like, mathematics I put up because a teacher at Banks of the Gun asked me to put it up.
Yeah.
I'm not saying, like, oh, I haven't, you know, don't want to do anything. Like, I sit and set up tweets. I do promote myself, obviously. It's not like everything just landed on the bloody doorstep. But I don't, like, have this agenda that I'm trying to, like, rally people to think a certain way. I write about everything, like, every book I read. I do, like, summaries of most chapters in poems and... Yeah, I don't know.
But I'm not saying that, like, you're trying to rally people. But what I'm trying to say is that the fact that you are trying to search for some kind of a meaning, maybe that's the reason why mathematics resonated with so many people, because a lot of people are trying to come to grips with their opinion on the subject of immigration.
Yeah, and because it's short. That's what my mum said.
She's trying to play herself down.
No,
man.
I'm not. My mum genuinely said, I don't know why that one spread so much, Holly. It's not one of your best, is it? Maybe because it's very short and easy to understand, was like specifically her words, because she likes the more like poetic.
Oh, real flowery.
Yeah. But yeah, I don't know. I feel like with mathematics, it was not enough. I'm not trying to like big myself up, but it was like a summary of like a 100-page bloody research thing that I was having to read for a dissertation I was writing. And it was all just about the job market. Like, loads of the times when I read all that academic stuff, I think you don't need to say it in this many words. It's always annoyed me ever since I started studying. Like, yeah, I wrote my whole dissertation at uni on, like, language use and intellectualism and all that sort of thing. And it just drives me mad. I think you don't... Why have you said this in 100 pages?
Well, I think, in a way, that's part of kind of like a poet's job. Yeah. If a comedian's trying to find the simplest way to a punchline, right, a poet's trying to find the simplest way to a meaning.
Yeah.
You should big yourself up, man.
Yeah, man.
I don't want to big myself up.
Big yourself up.
Why? You're not doing anything more important than anyone else. Like,
you're part of the poetry scene, and it's really, really good when you see someone
who's got
very, very good vision and is very talented, do well. Because there are many, many, many people who are talented and have vision, but for some reason it doesn't click. And for you, you've put a lot of work in it. I used to talk about you to a lot of people, say, like, you know, she's been chatting about breastfeeding and a lot of left-leaning ideas from day dot. This is not so...
You sound so freaky.
Yeah,
said, I know this girl's been chatting about breastfeeding, bro. I mean, yeah, check her out, man.
Yeah, no, but
that's it. It's the breastfeeding poem.
Yeah, it's just
like,
that one.
That was two years after I was like full time already. Yeah, like, but
I think kind of like, even though you say that, you know, you were trying to find your thoughts on the matter, I feel like you being a left-leaning poet, I mean, someone who's very, very principled. I remember when you were at One Taste and you were doing stuff with Sabrina Mahfouz.
Yeah.
And I remember just listening to you just going, wow, this is some really hard, some really thoughtful stuff. Oh my God. So you've been doing this from day to day.
But a bit angry.
But then I accepted that was a side of you, a really dark side of you.
A Hulk
to your Bruce Banner. Yeah. And we were both very valid and very, very welcome. And I think it's great that that has all worked out for you. And I think it's something that's worth celebrating. So big yourself up.
I'm really excited and I'm very, really grateful for what I do. I love it. I think I've got like, the best job in the world. I absolutely love it. There was nothing at all that I'd complain about this job, but I just know that there's other people that work as hard and that it's half hard work and then there's luck in it.
Yeah, but we ain't inviting them to our show. Because I'm cold-blooded.
There's going to be like 10 articles tomorrow, I would say. There's going to be Facebook posts tomorrow about how Josh and Mr. D tried to bully Holly McNeish into bringing herself
exactly.
Up.
All right. And then we'll just say, well, that Holly McNeish, she was a bit braggy and boasty. Damn, man. Female Prime Minister, man. Boy, they're all coming up now, man.
So I did a gig the other day and it was called hashtag difference maker. Yeah. This is the sort of thing I mean. You cringe
with it.
Awful.
Yeah.
And it was a great gig. It was such a good opportunity.
You're not a difference maker then. You don't make a difference.
No more than like
with a hashtag.
My friend who's looking after twins and gets no credit for it, or my mum who's worked as a nurse for this lot. Like I don't, it's just people that are in the public eye that get these sort of praises. Yeah, I don't know. But having to say, like, they asked me to do a film to say, why are you a difference maker? Oh, really?
Yeah.
Really? Yeah. And everyone else seemed quite comfortable with it. Like, I'm a difference maker because I inspire people. It's like,
you should have taken an apple and just, I cut it in half. So now it's half an apple. That's a difference.
That difference to who? I've had like an easy life, man. I've had a privileged, easy life. I'm not struggling against things. I'm speaking my mind about stuff, I guess, that people don't all the time. But yeah.
Part of the game is that, like, it's like you could sit in your room alone and write poems and just entertain yourself. Then there's something that compels you to go out on stage.
Yeah.
And then I have this whole theory about this, right? Once you step on the stage.
Oh, God. Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, it is time for a fury.
Yeah.
Once you step on the stage, there are rules that come with stepping on a stage. You act a certain way, you project yourself a certain way. You are basically saying, I am going to speak while everyone else is going to be quiet.
Yeah.
Right? That is the rules of the stage. And you can try and pretend like, oh no, I'm just here doing my... No.
I hope that wasn't an impression of me.
It sure was, and it was done right in your face.
That was very terrible.
Don't try and get on her side.
I'm on your side.
I don't stand
on
the stage.
I am with you. That was really wrong. You need to apologise.
I apologise for nothing. I don't apologise for nothing, Drake. What I'm trying to say is that there are certain rules that come with being on stage. Now, you can try and critique those rules and just say, hey, why is it going to be like this? This is Josh now. Hey, why is it going to be like this? Why is it going to be like that? Why is it going to be like this? You can say all that stuff, but
that's the fact is... That's the most voice that I actually have.
Well, I know, because I'm trying to put the man in you, right?
Ooh.
That was so dark. What I'm trying to say...
Yeah, that was very worded phrasing.
Yeah. What I'm trying to say is that... You can critique those rules, but those rules are there.
Yeah, I'm not trying to get the audience to, like, chat back to me. Although, after every gig, I do go and stand there if anyone wants to talk to me.
Yeah.
And I don't stand on stage thinking, oh, why am I here? Like, this is unfair that I get to talk. And you get, like, obviously, I know that. But you can still be, like, graceful and not think you're doing the most important thing in the world.
I'm not saying that. But I'm saying to be on stage, you have to have a certain amount of confidence to be on stage. And in the same way...
Absolutely.
In the same way that when people do a show saying, we're going to call this show Difference Makers... Or we can have a show and call it Nobody's. You see what I'm saying?
You could have the show to say an evening with Lauren Laverne.
The game of promotion is the game of promotion.
Yeah, but that's fine. You can promote it in lots of different ways. I don't think I'm a hashtag like difference maker.
You wait till we see the hashtags that we associate to this show. Because I'm going to put some hashtags just for you, man.
Mr. G wants to be a hashtag. It's not like trying to be humble. I wish I was a hashtag.
Look at you trying to impersonate me now. I didn't notice any difference in your voice.
Sometimes people do things Because like I love poetry, I love writing poetry, and yeah, people now have asked me to go on stage, and I go on stage and I'm more comfortable there than I used to be, and people write and say, you know, thanks for writing this bit in the book, it's very helpful, which makes me think this is great. Also, I love the job compared to other jobs I was doing. Yeah. So it's like, okay, I'm not stopping doing this job, even if I vomited before stage every time, which I did about 2 years ago when I was on tour. But not everyone. I just think there's like you know, there's so many musicians, there's so many people on stage who are really, really shy people. Way shyer than me. I'm
Sia, for example. She doesn't even show her face.
Yeah. Or people that are like drumming in the back of a band and absolutely love it, but you still don't necessarily love that stage presence. Like, I love now reading stories and reading poems. I love it. I don't know. I don't like doing tours when I'm the only person reading. I like being able to see other people, and that's like the treat of it. You go on stage, you read, and that means for that, you get to now sit on your bum for like an hour and hear other people read poems.
Yeah.
Not always. Sometimes. I don't like
you
doing
know,
that.
You know Holly likes the headline, though, don't she?
No,
you know she likes the headline. No, you know.
Guys,
you know that Holly's like, I've seen you perform, right? I don't mind these other fools, right?
I just need to say something for 1 minute. The last email that I sent was to a girl in Glasgow who's asked me to do a gig in Glasgow, and I said, I will do it as long as I am not headlining it. Literally those words, because I don't want to go on last. I get nervous. I sit through the whole thing nervously. If someone asked me to go on first for 15 minutes, that is my perfect gig. Don't even try it. Don't worry about it.
I'm going to edit that whole sentence out. I will apologise.
I will
offer an apology. No, Holly ain't like that.
There you go.
She ain't like that. I'm just trying to wind her up, man.
I'm just trying
to wind her up, man.
Anyway, give us a song.
Yeah. All right. I would like Rachel Samani, and she's got a song called, she's got loads of songs that I like, but Tractor is probably my favorite.
Is it like Rex 3-2 Tractor?
No, it's
that's
not.
What I kept thinking. That's what I kept thinking.
It's not as much better.
Hating on Rich 3-2, man.
No, I'm not. I'm saying it.
Damn, man.
We're definitely not cutting that bit out. We are starting the beef right now.
I prefer Rachel Samani, yeah.
Beef starts here.
We never saw them, but we need no witnesses to know what's wrong. All the people gather around when dirt is found. This is dirt we stand upon. This is living, this is waking up alone.
Rex 3-2.
Yeah. Try to sound intelligent with the beef.
Yep, beef. I'm Mr. G.
And I am Joshua.
Got
Holly, beef starter, beef maker, you know, Rex 32 hater.
Unfair introduction. I just prefer Rachel Zamani. That's all because she's better.
So hard to take.
But we're living in very interesting times.
Why is it interesting?
I'll tell you why it's interesting.
It's because women are in charge now.
We've got a female prime minister for the second time in my lifetime.
Yeah.
Nicola Sturgeon is head of the SNP. Angela Merkel is head of Germany, and we may have by the end of this year, or by this time next year, we may even have a female president.
We might even have a female Labour leader.
Exactly. So the question is, have the feminists won? Holly.
That wasn't even sly.
The fact that you even think that is just so ridiculous. We've had a queen for however long. Don't mean that women are in charge of the country.
Or you could say it's very similar to like in the States where you have like black police chiefs. They're in charge, but they still propagate the same
system racism
yeah. of stop and search and shooting exactly. black males.
Because in order
like
to get to that position, they often
you
say,
have to
don't
adopt
they?
The mindset yeah. Yeah. of the oppressor.
Which you do, really.
Yeah.
I mean, you shouldn't, but in a lot of ways you do. Like the way that you're told to get into business as a female is to like pretend that you're not female in a way.
Yeah.
You know, that's
the whole I only trope.
Yeah, exactly. Or pretend that you're not a parent, or you know, all that stuff. I just
did you see the whole kind of beef between Andrea Leadsom and Theresa May, where Andrea said,
"Yeah, but she did."
The reason why she could be the a better
no, she didn't. She made a comment about being able to like have certain skills because she was a mother. But I think it got spun a little
did
bit.
You,
like I'm
you,
not
did
at fault
hear,
either
did
of them.
You hear the audio. Because I heard the audio. The audio is the woman asked, "How is your mom factoring into everything?"
Yeah.
And she
yeah.
said, "Because I'm a mom, I have more of a stake in this country."
Oh, yeah.
And there's even a hidden, there's even a hidden audio where she says, "And actually, being a parent is more important than being a performance poet." There's even brings it back. Gutshot. Headshot. Contender ready.
Do you know what though? I've got to say, I do think there are skills that you pick up, not necessarily just as a parent, but if you're a parent or a carer or anyone that has to be solely in charge of another human being, whether you're caring for maybe one of your parents or you work as a care or whatever it is, there's like a level of patience that I have never, ever, ever in my life had to deal with. I don't think I would have had that had I not had a person that I was in charge of that
yeah.
I had to literally always put before me for, you know, for like 2 years in terms of carrying them everywhere, not going some... like I don't know any other thing that could give you those skills. And I'm not saying that every parent has it. But
yeah.
that dependence and that like trying not to cry or losing your own life for a while and just doing everything for someone else, you know, I don't think it can just be dismissed. I don't think that parents care more about future generations than people that don't have children. Of course not.
Yeah, and also
whether that means
and
I
also
can be the Prime Minister more.
No, but a lot of it's also reflected in your poetry. That's the one thing I do remember when you were performing. So like, wow, you are presenting a mother's point of view, and then it was quite beautiful, especially like the one about breastfeeding, where
it's not just me.
No, it's a mother's point of view, but then it gives a reflection on society as a whole.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like, yeah, I don't necessarily think Theresa May is pro-female equality. Yeah.
Let's remove her policies from the equation. In terms of an achievement for a woman, you can't say it's not an achievement.
Yeah, but there's so many different things involved in it, isn't it? It's like, it's more of an achievement for a working class person to become prime minister than a woman to become prime minister. Like, was it that hard for her? I don't know.
We can't say it was easy, but you could say, in the scheme of things, the way it's actually turned out for Theresa May, the fact that she kind of did nothing and everybody else just stabbed themselves repeatedly and then she was like, oh,
hey, man, do you do what you got to do?
And also, every time something like that happens, it just, like, all the different issues that make up a human, they just stick to one, don't they? It's like with Obama. Obama being in doesn't mean that there's no racism in the US.
That's why I would say, take the policies away. I would say, whether or not you agree with Obama's policies or you disagree with Obama's policies, you can't say that him becoming the first mixed race president you can't say that's not an achievement.
Yeah, it's massive because it makes people see someone there and have
aspirations.
Yeah. But I don't know, in terms of feminism, Jeremy Corbyn's probably got more feminist policies that he agrees with than Theresa May.
Yeah,
but then that's because I'm like a left-wing female, so I'm probably just saying that he's got more like socialist, like general equality, which probably includes gender equality as well as class equality as well as racial equality.
You want a left anything party to just be in charge?
Not even like I like Labour.
Like why do you think that's conditional?
Oh, maybe it's just because
sometimes I feel like this. Like I feel that like Labour takes. It takes people's vote for granted.
It does. I feel
it
like
takes, it takes minority vote for granted. It takes the working class vote for granted.
I think that's why
they need to step their game up.
I think
up,
that's
man.
Why a lot of people have a problem with the whole kind of Blairism. It's like because that was essentially what happened. It was like what they did. They took a left leaning party.
They took it for granted
and then
they changed it.
Yeah, they took a left leaning party that had a lot of very very significant defeats on the course of Thatcher and John Major, right? And they made it more center-right-ish, right? And they said, okay, this is what we have to do. They put a big smile, use a lot of PR, and then they came in and just made it all about big business, completely ignored a lot of their power base, a lot of
But that's why I like, yeah. That's why I like Corbyn, not because he like, well, because he's calm as well, because he seems to have like this track record of actually giving a shit about stuff that he is involved in.
Yeah.
But like, he, no one's telling me why he definitely won't get voted for. It's just like, okay, he's not got leadership qualities. I keep hearing the sound bites over and over again. But then I keep watching interviews of him and he seems pretty on it.
Can I say why?
Go for it.
The reason why, I think the biggest reason why Corbyn will not get into power is because we live in a post-facts Britain. We live in an era of Britain where everything can be counted, fact can be completely nullified by just reams and reams of lies and falsities. Yeah, and the right have, they have a huge investment.
But they have it less.
I know we said we're not going to talk about Brexit, but I have to use Brexit as a wonderful example.
Bored of it,
right,
man.
Right. Look at Brexit, and now let's take a place. Let's pick a place. Let's pick Cornwall. Cornwall, right? They get 60 million a year from the EU, right? EU earmarked Cornwall as one of those places they're going to develop to bring in investments. And one of the ways they did this was by earmarking 60 million a year to Cornwall. The officials in Cornwall, they know this. And yet, Cornwall voted to leave.
Yeah, but people don't know everything, do they?
Yeah.
No,
like,
but
I don't
and
know,
immigration's a strong argument.
I don't know how much funding.
That's what I mean. That's what I mean about the politics of fear. You've got someone like Corbyn who's smart, like you said, he's smart, he's principled. If you check his YouTube video from day dot, he didn't just jump on the whole left wing. He's been doing it from a long time ago. Pink was sharing his video a long time before, and he's solid. He's a solid man, and he's been very, very good at reaching out to the young, and you know, a lot of people who even voted Brexit were still talking about how they really like Corbyn.
But he got in.
He got in. But when it comes to an election, imagine if he was going to vote. Imagine if he was campaigning against someone like Boris Johnson. Boris Johnson would kill him.
But he's not.
Right? If he was campaigning against someone like Theresa May. Theresa May, all she has to do is say, I'm a safe pair of hands. He has, you know, this whole...
Well, maybe all the people that, you know, maybe because she's a woman, they won't vote for her. So they might vote Labour. So maybe sexism will do Labour.
It's true.
Wow. sorry. We need to take a moment. Holly McNish is that pragmatic. She just said literally, I hope sexism...
I didn't say hope. Okay. I didn't say hope.
So, what did you say?
I said, maybe sexism will stop Theresa May being voted.
Okay.
And in fact, she's not a mother.
So we're holding our fingers crossed for
that
sexism. The sexism of the male and the self-hating woman will kick in.
You know, I imagine that some, not all, the idea of a woman, they may.
Yeah, but then again,
I don't want that to be the case. But I'm just saying that
I see your argument, right?
And it's the thing I'm worried about in America, basically.
Yeah. If Corbyn was Tony Blair and he had Alistair Campbell doing his PR, you totally see that they would, even if they didn't say it explicitly, they would dog whistle. But again, Corbyn is principled. He never once cracked a joke about David Cameron shagging a pig, right?
No,
never once.
See, I can't forgive him for that.
Open door.
I can't forgive him for that.
David Cameron said to Corbyn, why don't you do your tie, learn the national anthem, and sit down or whatever. Just proper this thing. And for me, if I was there, I'd be like, well, why don't you stop fucking a pig? I'd say it.
Trust me.
Yeah,
and Corbyn never did it.
Not, that is it. That's the whole point why he's so good.
So when we say, okay, yes, dirty tactics might get us what we want. No, because Corbyn, you can see Corbyn at the war table, and they're saying, we can get her like this,
what,
and he'd be like...
So what do you want? Another, like...
I want war, man.
I want some
arrogant.
I want
like
an Obama. I want someone who can play the game. I want someone who is going to tell.
Yeah,
because
right.
Look at it this way, right?
But who?
But that's why we're looking
like
to
who?
You.
Who?
We're looking
who?
To you. You.
Yeah.
You to break through.
Definitely.
Right?
You know what?
You could speak to the town folk. Right? You came from the countryside. You conquered London. And, and you've gone out back to the countryside. You understand the sticks, right?
You know what I'm saying?
You wrote poems about mathematics.
I love that. I'm 15 minutes from Cambridge Town Centre.
Exactly. Look at the song that you brought to us, Tractor, right? Country tune, right?
Excuse me, it's not all people in the countryside, yeah, that are like right wing Tory voting.
I saw a lot of blue on that map, man.
Yeah, that
map was very
that
clear,
map's very blue,
that
man.
Is, like,
that map's looking like Avatar.
So,
being a mother of a daughter,
mm-hmm.
Describe a world in which you want your daughter to grow up in.
That's a big question. It's quite like the world you grew up in to be based around a different economic theory. That would be my first.
In what sense?
Well, one that didn't need us to make a lot more things and consume it in order to carry on. Like, just because I think that's the main thing that messes a lot of things up, that we're... Like, a lot of the things that I think messes up, you know, all the kind of princess stuff, all the nice things for boys, all of that, like, lots of sexism, I think, lots of racism, I think, loads of stuff is just based on selling products.
Yeah.
And obviously all the environmental damage is based on selling products, and I think there needs to be, like, a new theory, because otherwise you can't just stop doing it and then people lose jobs and then you not know what to do.
Yeah.
So I think that's probably the most important thing.
But as a parent, do you find yourself, like, on... Like seeing your daughter being socialised into becoming a girl.
Yeah, but I don't think I'd be any more scared having a girl than a boy. In some ways, actually, I used to be very adamant before I had a daughter that it is worse for girls than boys. And I think, obviously, in a lot of places it is. And in a lot of ways, it still is, definitely, in the UK or where I am specifically. But I also see boys being indoctrinated a lot, which causes as many problems. I think, like, if, I don't know, like the princess thing, like girls needing to be saved, and definitely don't talk up already as much as the boys do in primary schools.
Yeah.
Don't go into sport as much already, like all these different things. But then the boys, I think they already feel a bit pressured to speak up. So the idea that the boy's meant to be the knight, so he's meant to be able to save, I think that's kind of as damaging as the princess needing to be saved. I don't think one is less or more pressure than the other.
Yeah, they're both false narratives.
Yeah, like the boys come into school on like World Book Day dressed up as Superman, Batman. It's great, like powerful figures and man.
Yeah.
Like no costume for girls has the word woman in it. Like no girl is meant to aspire to be a woman. They're like Supergirl at best, I think. Spider-Woman and Wonder Woman, they're the only ones. Spider-Woman, like the series seemed to just get snubbed out, but I watched that quite a lot. So they're not taught to aspire to get any older, I don't think, or to be like superheroes. But I think boys being told that they are superheroes and they're like failing to live up to that, I think maybe is as damaging. Like when I go into schools with teenagers, I look at the girls and I think, oh God, like you're not speaking up. You won't put your hand up to answer a question.
Yeah.
You're obviously already bred by society to be quiet, not speak your mind, to be way more worried about your opinion. But then the boys, if we do anything about feelings or emotions, they can't do it. They make jokes. They're like teasing each other. And I think, okay, so at least girls have, not all girls, obviously, but the majority more have these like networks that they can talk to, be open about their feelings. But I think boys are unfairly told not to be like that.
I think that the boys or men need a safe space where they can project emotions, and outside of that safe space they're not going to project emotions.
No, and that's it. Men need a safe space to project emotions, and women need a safe space to like speak their mind.
Yeah,
because those seem to be the things that they're stopped doing.
Everybody
both of them, and equally
so
they're equally
they
important
feel.
I think in life I've probably been like definitely hindered by that kind of, oh my God, I'm female, I'm not going to speak up. But Jesus, if I didn't have the ability to like phone any, well, mainly female friend I've got and like splurt out how I was feeling,
I would
have been equally damaging for my mental state, I think. Like I was going to say, the book I'm reading at the minute is about this father trying to work out how to talk to his autistic son and trying to work through that, and him going through a separation and not having any male friends that will approach the topic, and trying to approach it through like talking about football and then trying to get that. And as soon as they do it, they'll like change the subject.
Yeah.
So it's loads about that, and it's about them.
But guys do that
finding
stuff,
each
though.
Other through Minecraft.
Guys
basically.
Do. I once had a friend of mine, right? He was going through like a divorce. And his wife wouldn't let him back into the house. And so he's talking to me and he's trying to explain the situation. But obviously he's not going to do it in terms of mentioning the situation between him and his wife. What he's actually saying to me is he's saying, yeah, she won't give me the key to the tool shed. And she knows how important those tools are in the shed to me. And she just being so inconsiderate. I've got tools there that can take off the wheel for my car, and I've got tools in there that can help fix the carburetor. And I'm a dude, so I know what he's saying. I'm not going to get him to pinpoint it to his relationship, right? Because I know what he's saying. I know that he wants to be back home, but he has to put it in that machismo state to be able to relate it to me. And I'm not going to piece it apart and say, come on, man, you're missing your wife, aren't you? I'm not going to say that to him, right?
Why?
You know, because there's a thing where I have this whole thing, especially when I get into conversations about the role of sexes. I honestly believe men have to be able to keep their pride. If you take a man's pride away from him, then what is he left with?
But you know, I think that's because he's been set up in a certain way. Like, there's a only through doing poetry that I've met a lot of guys that aren't as like huggy with each other or talk about their feelings as much.
That's Josh and his friends, man. For the rest of us.
And look how happy they are. Look how happy,
yeah,
look
exactly.
How happy
exactly.
They are.
You're always moaning.
Look how grumpy inside you
like,
are.
I
look how happy
haven't really
maybe
seen
maybe
that
you should let go of your pride.
I think you take away a man's pride, man, it's a dangerous thing.
I see what Mr. G's saying. Okay, look.
Yeah, no, I do, but if he's already in that situation, but if they're not raised like that from the beginning, I think it would be different. Like, boys are all... even from toddler group, I got fascinated being at like these toddler groups because I thought, right, I don't know if I think this is nurture or nature or how the hell we can know. Like, obviously you can't unless you do experiments that are horrendously cruel and impossible. But you do see little boys being told not to cry, not given hugs as much, and being told like not to play with the things that are female. And then I'm like, okay, so most of those things are like the caring things or the, you know, going and getting a cup of tea and serving like a tea party or whatever. Those, it's like being nice. Like, you're told not to play with the things that are being nice. So they keep saying, oh, but you know, boys aren't naturally as caring or whatever. But then I'll see loads of boys obviously playing with ambulances and police cars and stuff. You're like, you associate that with him being interested in transport rather than him being interested in like driving an ambulance to save someone's life, which could be the same as a girl dressing up as a nurse. Or I just think we pulled them apart so much. I don't know. I find it weird. Like, every time I do a poem or anything or put something online, which is about girls, like pressure on girls to be a certain way, every time without fail, I get people obviously just shouting or calling you a bitch or whatever. But I also always get someone mentioning the fact that more men commit suicide than women.
Definitely.
And I always think, like, I know that, but it's not a competition. There's so much pressure put on men and women and boys and girls, and some of it is based on gender. None of it's very helpful.
Yeah.
But the fact that I'm saying, okay, these girls are pressurized to, like, go into toilets, or the girls that I've been working with at the minute, go into toilets and, like, take pictures of themselves, and then they're often shared around, they're called a slut, you know, that kind of thing. And then someone will say, yeah, but more young boys commit suicide. What are you saying? And also, like,
it's a bit
go into
all lives matter, isn't it?
Yeah,
yeah, exactly. And go into like talks about it. I went to a talk about suicide, basically, after one of the students that I was teaching commit suicide, a young boy. Oh. And the woman was saying more men successfully commit suicide, but the same amount try. So she was like, if you want to have an argument about it, this is not helping the situation. Like, more men die from suicide, but the same amount of people try to commit suicide because they try in different ways, and a lot of the way that women do it are different, and that's from social engineering as well. It doesn't often work. But I just think, oh my God, why are you
playing that game?
Because,
yeah.
No, it's because they want to silence you. It's the same reason
why... men have issues as well.
It's the same reason why Rudy Giuliani, they wheel him out every time a police shoots a black person, and Rudy just goes, what about black on black crime? It's not because he wants to solve black on black crime. It's just because he wants to distract you
from
what you're talking about.
I'd probably be on the other side with that because it is such a racial thing. Whereas I think with gender, there's so many other things to play.
But when I get into these conversations, right? Because listen, I get into loads of conversations about male roles and female roles. Especially within poetry, especially in the poetry scene, because people say, oh, yeah, you know,
expand, you want to be the man.
Expand your feelings, whatever, blah, blah, blah. You're too macho, whatever.
Because you are.
But there's a part of me that
you
just thinks...
No hair.
There's a part of me that thinks, in a way, don't take away someone's masculinity. You can't take a guy's masculinity away from him.
Maybe that's not masculinity. Maybe that's just part of your personality. Yeah, like, that's when people say to a woman, oh, don't be so, like, sexual. Or, you know, they're all different. Like, there are some men that won't have as much testosterone as you, surely. Like, surely there's...
I understand that. But in terms of, like, that's why I talk about having a safe space to show emotions. If you go to, like, a football match, you will see men exhibit all forms of emotion. You'll see men hug each other, cry. The idea of the game being fair, the idea of fair play is such a big thing in football. Like, people cheating is hating and stuff like that. You'll see all the emotions that women will say that their men don't exhibit. They don't communicate. But the fact is that they don't like the fact that we would do it in a space that is blocked out from them.
I don't like it. I guess it depends on relationships, though. If you're in a relationship with someone that, you know, never talks about it, it might be quite hard to be in it. But I think that safe space is like with anything. For example, more people will go and get a massage than like ask their friend to rub their back. like we there's a safe space that we
well I asked Josh but he said no
but there are these safe spaces that we do things that society tells us that we shouldn't really, which one of them is like crying for men or hugging each other or whatever, but not in all cultures, is it?
Just to expand on Holly's point, I think yes, there are the idea that there is like one main or one significant or one, you know, hallowed idea of what a man should be or what masculinity should be. This goes back to our conversation on violence and video games and movies. What kind of man are we all? Because there are different types of men.
That's true.
A different idea. I think, and each idea or each version of a man should be as accessible and respectable as the rest.
It doesn't sell. It's not commercial. Like adverts, they play, like they need people to be as homogenous as possible so that they can have the one image of a man and the one image of a woman to sell a man's products and sell. I think so much of that is also commercial. Not totally, don't get me wrong. People have different hormones, different personalities, but like advertising needs this divide. Otherwise, you say, some men might like this.
I think it's a bit of a chicken and egg situation that, you know, two things actually feed into each other. Because, take for example, if you look at gender issues in the same way as you look at race, you could say that the reason why there's so many films with male white leads is because that is the big market that they sell to. However, the big two films of last year, one of them was Fast and Furious 7. The other one was Star Wars, both which had very, very diverse casts, and Star Wars in particular had a female lead and a black man, right? And it's done well, regardless. You know, it's done well.
But do you think that's a different? Do you think that's different from like a pink razor and a blue razor? Like, that's a bigger...
That's an interesting concept, right? Because apparently pink used to be associated with boys about 100 years ago.
Yeah.
That's what I mean. So all
and it's true what she says about advertising, where they start saying, okay, we need to advertise products to the men and advertise products to women. Therefore, we will associate a certain spectrum of colours that will be deemed female, a certain spectrum of colours that will be deemed
and
masculine.
And it's not just girls and boys. Like, you didn't always have separate shampoos. You didn't always have separate razors. You didn't always have razors or shampoos in the first place, obviously. Like, they're creating a thing. Not that I'm saying everything is not needed, but like seeing how they're doing it with kids now, like they started on men and women, I think, a lot in advertising, and now they're doing it on kids way more than they even did when I was little. Like splitting this gender because girls want this and boys want that. It's like, no, like you're selling twice as much products. It's clever. And yeah, of course there's certain things that are going to be natural in some people, but it's crazy. Like, I get sold a different outdoor jacket to my daughter when I go in the shop and look at a green jacket. It's got different stitching because boys climb trees more, so the stitching doesn't wear as quickly as the girls. Like, the school shoes are different because girls, apparently, I've been told, don't... Like, girls' school shoes, they have less grip on them, they've got holes in the top. Same with women's shoes, I guess, because girls don't go outside as much, apparently. Like, I'm told this by, like, 17-year-old shop assistants who've obviously been told it to do with the products, and it just...
It's a bit like the male bike and the female bike, and when you button your coat one way, it's man, button your coat another way, it's women.
Like, boys and girls, I wanted to take my daughter in to buy her a bike in a shop, but I'm looking forward to it as like this parent time to go in. How exciting. The girls and boys' bikes are separated. The boys' bikes have got like speed things, lightning bolts, they're like police bikes, and the girls' bikes have got baskets. And even in one of the shops, there was this little boy crying because he couldn't have a basket and a like seat on the back of his bike for his teddy bear. It's like, what? So boys have to cycle in order to like fast get somewhere, and girls have to cycle in order to like pick berries. Or that is mental, but it's clever.
Yeah,
that big corporation.
Yeah, it is pretty difficult. I mean, just to kind of round off on another terrible example of advertising kind of messing stuff up, the new Ghostbusters movie has four female leads.
Yeah,
the Ghostbusters game has two men and two girls. You've had years of Ghostbusters video games that have all been four men. And the one time when the film has four women, the game's like, nah, split. It has to be even shit. And then all the toys are being marketed towards boys.
Yeah.
Like, parents of kids, of girls, have to campaign to have toys of...
You're right.
And just because, for some reason, they had toys of all the male, and all of them, but...
Yeah. It's a shame, though, because they often say, like, don't they, with things like that, oh, well, it's just that the kids choose it, so they veer towards the girls' bit.
Mm.
As if it's, like, this natural idea, not the fact that kids are very clever, and my daughter goes and stands in the shop and thinks, I can either choose what I'm meant to choose... Or I can, like, have to have the confidence to be the odd one out and choose the boys' thing. Like, it's not like they're just have any range. She knows that this is for girls, and that if she specifically doesn't choose it, she is making a specific judgment out
almost
of
a political choice.
Yeah. Out of what she's meant to be.
Yeah.
So you're putting kids in that situation where they've either got to be the odd one, or they just do what they're told.
Yeah, and we're going to get a Tory government in 2050. I moved it from 2049 to 2050. I feel like any change that's going to happen it's going to happen very slowly, but very surely, which leads me on to my choice, which is Jill Scott, slowly, surely.
Okay.
See, so I did it.
Nice.
So, thank you.
It's rubbish, but...
It was very nice, actually.
Speaking for you.
You've done it. I was speaking in the last section.
Exactly, man. Chatting away for ages.
Anyway, this has been a really, really exciting. I think I really enjoyed having you here, Ollie. It's been great. It's been a wonderful conversation we've had.
It's actually been good seeing you. No, seriously, on a real front, because, like, you know, when you poets, you only ever see each
other.
You know that you only ever see each other, like, before shows or after shows, where there's that nervous energy of I'm about to perform or I'm not about to
everyone's
perform.
Everyone's like, hey, so nice to see you. I can't talk to you right now. I'm going to the toilet to cry.
Exactly, yeah. Well, I'm going to have a little breakdown and stuff like that, right?
I'll see you after the set. Yeah.
And then you've got to catch the last train to go home. So, yeah, no, it's I'm real glad you came down just to vibe and chill, man.
Yeah, it's cool. So this is the section where we talk about stuff that we've seen prior, before, and just say how problematic it is. Or in the case of Mr. G, he's just going to talk about X-Men.
No. Sean Mahoney, he killed X-Men.
Are you sure?
Sean Mahoney absolutely killed X-Men.
You don't want to talk about X-Men. Right. Or Jungle Book. Those are the last two films you've ever seen.
No. Did you see
the real Jungle Book, the one with the real people in it?
Yeah.
Is it good?
Nah.
Aww.
It ain't worth it, seriously.
I'm just 3D.
No, I don't do 3D.
No, it hurts your eyes. Not your eyes.
I went. I never go and see 3D movies. I was going to see the 2D version, right?
Yeah.
And I saw the funniest thing ever in a cinema. So I'm in there. We're watching, I think it was Men in Black 3.
Yeah.
And it was a 2D version.
See, I haven't seen that movie, though.
You know, there was his father, and he had his two sons in the front row.
Mm.
And so,
don't tell me they had their glasses.
Yes, he just said to them, go on kids, put your glasses on. And they took out their 3D glasses and they sat down and they watched the whole movie. I looked at that dad and said, you know you ain't paying extra for that, no brother. You ain't paying the 3D price, man. He just gave them the glasses and they sat throughout the whole movie thinking they watched a 3D movie.
Wow. Kids are so thankful for stuff, aren't they? They're so thankful.
So funny. Yeah, no, I had to spot him for that, man.
Somebody who's not a parent.
That's kind of heartbreaking. Yeah, it's my friend who puts oats on top of her food and says it sprinkles and the kids get so excited. I'm like, you just put an oats.
It's beautiful.
Actually, I used to play with
plumbing stuff. Like, I'd pick up a piece of plumbing material.
I wonder, it's way more fun than all the other stuff.
Deep, man.
It was a spaceship. It's like Space 99, you know, the long one?
Just like a piece of tubing.
Yeah, Space 999. Yeah,
right. But that's like those playgrounds you get now that are just junkyards. But there's playgrounds that they've set up and they're just covered in old mattresses, old sofas, and kids are allowed to do whatever they want. They're better than even play parks.
Just the hood.
No!
Yeah. Holly McNeish has just described
Holly McNeish has just discovered an estate. Whoa, look at this abandoned mattress. Look at this empty, burnt out car. Oh my God! Are these syringes on the floor? Wow!
I'm not having these city versus country jokes. I think I live in a less expensive place than you Londoners.
Okay then, come on in, Josh. What have you been seeing?
I saw the new version of Roots.
Roots?
Roots. They've done Roots 2016.
Wow, man.
And, man, I've had bad issues with it. Like,
what's it called? Kunte Obama?
Yeah. Kunte Obama. I don't know where I saw it, but someone made a very valid point that there's only been, like... Oh, no, it was a comedy show. I went to a comedy show and someone said, like... He was talking about how people always complain that, you know, there are too many slave narratives. And he was like, well, there's only been three. Roots, Amistad, and 12 Years a Slave. So what are we complaining about? Mm. Obviously, he was just joking.
Yeah.
But watching it... First off, I think television has been very, very good of late. It's just been the form to actually write decent dramas. Yeah. And so when you watch something that's got a good premise and it isn't done right, you just kind of get really upset. And it just has the hallmarks of really, really corners cut, terrible writing in the midst of what was an amazing premise. And you think, oh, they could have made this work so well.
So what is it? I haven't watched any telly for a long time.
Well, Roots was, it was an old...
I've heard of Roots, but is this like a second series or something?
It's just a retelling.
Oh, okay.
It's a retelling. So, again, you know, a lot of the actors, they're competent, but they're not even the makeup that, because obviously it goes through generations, right? So, we see Kunta Kinte when he's supposed to have an adult kid, and you're like, well, you don't look any older in any way, shape, or form. They didn't even bother to sprinkle some white in your beard or whatever.
Put oats on top of his head.
Yeah, put some oats on. It's old age.
Oh, my God!
No, they didn't even bother to do that. Forest Whitaker is Forest Whitaker, which is just a man who should have like at least 200,000 Oscars to his name.
Uh-huh. Yeah,
because
yeah.
he can make a laptop seem like the greatest piece of cinema you've ever seen.
Yeah, but do you think it's from budget?
It's from, what do you mean?
The film.
Like,
the film.
Do you think they've got a lower budget?
You know, you watch things that are written by like David Simon, who did The Wire, and David Simon can set a scene in a single square box and it would seem like it's just bad writing.
Right.
It's just really, it's just bad writing, editing that's not really confident in itself. And, you know, they've paid money, they want to tell the story. Because, you know, the scenes in Africa look absolutely amazing. Sure, there's some scenes that you can tell this is a set, but
yeah.
Some very, very good camera work. It's just
where,
like,
is it set?
In West Africa, some would be set in what?
It's actually set in East Africa. Very Muslim part of East Africa. Then it moves on to America.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's set in...
As a rule, I don't really like slave movies, you know. I think I've said this to you before. That's why I didn't like 12 Years a Slave. Well, I never saw Amistad.
The reason why
is I've seen the ultimate slave movie.
Okay.
The ultimate slave movie is called Goodbye, Uncle Tom. And if you can sit through that,
I have not seen that.
Never want to watch another slave movie again. It's atrocious. Like, when people say, oh, they're not capturing the realism or whatever, because this movie tries to be a comedy. It's like a 1970s Italian made movie, and they do it like as a mockumentary of a slave plantation. And here's the worst bit, is that most of the dialogue comes from actual slave narratives written by the slave masters, and they try and make it a comedy. And if you can sit through that, you'll never want
to
watch
it. Try and make it a comedy, like it wasn't meant to be a...
They make it really sarcastic. It's very, very sarcastically done. It's terrible. If you can sit and watch that movie, then boy, you ain't never going to watch another slave movie again. Because none will ever hit that mark.
Gonna find it.
Of offensiveness. Because Raymond Antrobus from Chill Pill, he was like talking to me about like, oh, this 12 Years a Slave is so amazing, it captures the reality and whatever and blah, 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 and the harshest word. I sent him the link for that, and I think he could only watch 10 minutes, and he goes, I can't watch anymore, it's just too much, it's just too offensive, right? And I'm thinking,
were they trying to be offensive, or they didn't know they were being offensive?
It's not that they're trying to be offensive. The fact is that the act of slavery is always going to be offensive.
Yeah.
So when you sit and watch it, you just go, oh my God, this is fucking
awful. Well, see, that, I think that was something that I found really annoying, because I honestly believe, right, that going back to roots, I believe that the idea of the benevolent slave is a Hollywood myth.
Right.
I really believe that the idea that there was this guy and he was, you know, he's not like the other slave masters. He was really, really nice and, you know.
Benevolent slave or slave master?
Slave owner, yeah. Okay. I think that's what I meant. Benevolent slave owner is a myth. The idea that this guy was really nice and, you know, he was all right. He treated everybody nice. He whistled with them and he came into the barn and he clapped and he sang them a prayers. That's bullshit. Right, I really feel.
Why do you say that?
You know, it's as much bullshit. Look at this.
Have you ever had a nice boss?
No, listen. Let me explain.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Yeah, no, see, let me explain it. The idea of a benevolent slave master is the same as a false rape. It's not like it doesn't exist, but compared to the amount of rape cases that don't actually even make it to prosecution, the amount of rape cases that make it to prosecution and the guy gets off. And the fact that we've had so many films where, you know, there is
I think it's a different argument. I'll tell you why it's a different argument. Because you're comparing a very brief interaction between two people, whereas if you're controlling a slave
club. You want to talk about how long rape has been happening compared to how long slavery has been happening.
No.
How many times?
Josh, you're not listening to me. You're not listening to me. When someone rapes someone, that interaction is going to be very, very brief, right? When someone's controlling someone's whole life from cradle to the grave, that's a long-term relationship.
Yeah, but my argument is that the whole idea of slavery is wrong, is evil.
Of course it's wrong.
To begin with, right? And the idea that, you know, someone owning somebody else and in some way, you know, because in Hollywood, they don't perceive it over 1,000 years where you can see that. I mean, this is the problem I'm having with the film, because maybe if this was like a long TV series or was written by somebody else, you could see that complicated relationship that a man could have with a slave, where at some points maybe he showed some moments of kindness, and a man would show his dogs or, you know, his
house. That's why I wouldn't compare it to rape. I'd compare it to an abusive relationship. Let's say a woman's in an abusive relationship. There will be moments of joy within that relationship. Even if she looks on the relationship as a whole as being abusive, there'll be moments where she'll say, okay, yeah, he was nice to me on this day and he beat me on this day. He was nice to me on that day and he raped me on that. Do you understand what I'm saying? So that's why when you say to a woman that's in an abusive relationship, well, why didn't you leave? Why didn't you leave? It's not as easy as just saying, okay, fuck him, he's a bastard, I'm just going to go.
But also it's not as easy because most of the women that have been killed has been when they've been trying to leave. Like, there's other things, isn't it?
Yeah.
But I do kind of... I see, like, not in terms of, like, comparing them as actual things, but in terms of the fact that the amount of false rape allegations that are shown in the media compared to the amount of, like, unreported rapes is horrendous.
Yeah.
Which, if you're saying, like, the idea that there were some masters who weren't absolutely atrocious, maybe there's 1%, but they're in 99% of the films or whatever.
Yeah, it's just kind of like, you know, you have the one slave master who was clearly evil, and somehow he had been contrasted with the...
Oh, and that's for the market, isn't it? It's for the market of white people that want to go and watch it, and also want to feel like every white person was horrible.
Exactly. Right? And also, maybe there's a part of you that doesn't want to even see a nice white person in a slave environment.
You know what? That's actually true. I think the same way is like when people watch stuff like concentration camps.
Yeah.
It's really hard to watch. I wouldn't know, but if I was Jewish, I would imagine if I was watching something about concentration camps and they showed all those people in concentration camps, if they showed the one German Nazi officer who was looking upon this with a tear rolling down his eyes, I'd stand up in cinema and yell bullshit, right?
I don't think I would. I don't know.
It's complicated. History is complicated.
And so is history. Like, my God, there's like not at all in the same way, but the fact that like we sit back and let atrocities happen and don't spend our whole lives trying to fight against them, like, it's hard to say, no? Like, I am fully aware that there are people right now sold into slavery, that there are 10-year-old girls and boys tied to beds getting raped every day. I'm not out protesting against it every day.
Because you've got to live your life.
Like, why is that?
Yeah.
Well, because I've got all my love life, that's an excuse, because I enjoy myself.
Yeah, same is. I was put on this planet to have fun. That's why. I realize that.
No,
I can't sit and cry over every single atrocity.
That's absolutely true. Not that you're kind of like, you're not campaigning against all the stuff that's happening. Supposing, take for example, you owned a boat that was draining the oceans of all of his fish. Yeah, like you're actively part of the problem. You're not kind of like passive.
I am actively part of the problem. I consume things more than I need.
Yeah, I think that's passive.
It's not passive. You can stop doing it. It's very easy not to do it. I don't have to buy every fruit wrapped in plastic. But if I'm a bit hungry on the day,
we buy stuff from Primark and we know that
there's sweatshop. Yeah.
Sweatshops.
I know it's like once removed, but it doesn't make you not culpable. And, you know, you make as many excuses as you want, but mostly the reasons that people don't act on it is because they don't care enough.
Yes, they're not affected by it enough.
Yeah.
They care enough to, you know, have a recycling bin, but not enough to just not buy a snack if they feel like it.
But I feel that's still different from, say, owning a slave. I think that's still very different from you own, not even like that. What's it called? That documentary that they showed on television where it turned out that a lot more people in Britain owned slaves. They said they owned it as like
investment.
Yeah. You know, you had one slave and he lived and he paid for your rent or whatever. Like, it was like owning a house.
But that's also
right. For me, it's like, if they made a film about that and it showed normal decent people who own slaves and whatever and how they dealt with that kind of hypocrisy. But still, I feel like the amount of times I've had to sit through
the amount,
it's been like a nice guy slave owner. I'm just like,
well, then you need to watch my film Goodbye Uncle Tom.
I'm downloading it right now, but you're gonna hate life.
You'll hate white people.
That's the main point. Why have they always got that character in the film as if on every single?
Like, Tom is asleep. I feel like,
but it's like when you change lyrics to soften it for the audience that's gonna buy it. That's it. Yeah. That's the only reason
it's like Tom is asleep, right? I really feel like Brad Pitt has somewhere in his contract where he goes, if I'm producing this film, I have to be added in this film as the moral voice. He did it in The Big Short and he did it in 12 Years a Slave, where he just popped for 5 minutes, no reason whatsoever, and suddenly he was the one who delivered the letter that saved the character.
If you want to see pure hell and damnation,
I'm downloading the film.
You'll see it.
But that
right
is
now.
Commercial stuff then again, isn't it? That is about selling a product. They've put that character in to sell a product to people that don't want to go to the cinema and see someone that looks like them being horrible all the time, because they're a mass audience for all the films, because a lot of places there's the ones with money to go to the cinema. You know, like, it is selling a product.
Yeah, you know, in Italy, when they had the first poster for 12 Years a Slave, they had Brad Pitt's face and Michael Fassbender.
Yeah.
And then
you got to sell them tickets, baby.
Well, it's like with the Star Wars one, though.
Yeah, in China.
Anyway, enough about my films. Who's...
What?
What comic? Or your play.
Exactly.
I haven't seen a play.
We're trying to get away from Josh's Views Matter, right? So Holly, what have you been up to then?
What have you seen now?
Why have you not? I have not seen anything at the theatre for a long time. I was trying to think about this, what I was going to talk about.
She actually rang me up because she was more nervous about this part, which is meant to be the most relaxed part of the show. She's more nervous.
I don't really get out like that much. I literally go from like being a mum and hanging around the park and like doing the monkey bars, which I'm pretty good at, to like going to gigs, hearing myself read poems, and then going to another gig and hearing myself read
I think Holly's hiding something from us, man. I think there's a secret world of Holly McNeish that she just doesn't want to let out.
Right, of course.
Because all you're saying to us is like, yeah, just do a bit of poetry and I'll just go and play on the monkey bars. There's something in between poetry and monkey bars we need to get into, man.
Trust me.
I mean, she's like Deadpool, you know.
I don't know. Is there? Yeah. I travel a lot. I listen to that. Download a lot of podcasts now to listen to. You better download this one. I realized that my brain was being mashed by like Magic FM, Heart FM. They're like genuinely the only radio stations I can listen to while I'm driving. God,
seriously,
I knew you were going to say that. Yeah, and I don't.
Oh, you become one of them folk. Easy
I
listening.
Become one of them folk.
Oh, you always were easily listening. Oh, sorry. Excuse me. He's hitting you with the gut shots. I think we'll end it that way. And I'm going to fulfill the...
What?
The criteria. What? I'm going to tick the box. And we'll go with probably one of... Well, actually, it's in my top ten of...
Terrible songs you've ever heard.
Of hip-hop.
Your hip-hop. So it's going to be Ice Cube doing something stupid again, isn't it?
No. It's going to be Queen Latifah and Unity.
Oh, wow.
Josh can't cuss it. Josh can't cuss it.
He can't cuss it. Can't touch it. That's Teflon done right there. Very good. Very, very good. All right. Thank you very much, Holly.
Thanks for choosing female singers.
Yay.
Oh,
we did.
Was that
on purpose? No, that was not on purpose. I just went for Jill Scott because I wanted to, because he wouldn't
No, you did
Jill
Scott before.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you played Morris Dancer at the beginning, which was...
That tune is... You, when you hear it, it's hectic.
I bet most Morris Dancers are like liberal hippies.
No, man. Some Wickerman shit.
Wickerman shit.
They on some Wickerman shit, man. You know what I mean? They got secret daughters in the basement, man. Speak to another flow. Every time I hear a brother playing that song, I think of you. A brother call a girl a bitch or a hoe, trying to make a sister feel low. You know all of that got to go. Now everybody knows there's exceptions to this rule. I don't be getting mad when we playing, it's cool. But don't you be calling me out my name. I bring rap to those who disrespect me like a dame. That's why I'm talking. One day I was walking down a block, I had my cut off shorts on, right? Cause it was crazy hot. I walked past these dudes when they passed me. One of them felt my booty, he was nasty. Yeah. I turned around red, somebody was catching the rat. Then the little one said,
yeah, me bitch.
And laughed. Since he was with his boys, he tried to break the block. I punched him dead in his eyes.
Who you calling a bitch?
U-N-I-T-Y.
Days at work give you an attitude and you erupt. And take it out on me, but that's about enough. You put your hands on me again, I put your ass in handcuffs. I guess I fell so deep in love, I grew dependency. I was too blind to see just how it was affecting me. All that I knew is you was all the man I had. And I was scared to let you go, even though you treated me bad. But I don't wanna see my kids see me getting beat down by daddy smacking mommy all around. You say I'm nothing without you, but I'm nothing with you. A man don't really love you if he hits you. Yeah. This is my notice of the tool, I'm not taking it no more. I'm not your personal whore, that's not what I'm here for. Ain't nothing good gon' come to you till you do right by me. Brother, you ain't sitting.